Breaker, breaker, dear listeners. I want to welcome all of the beautiful geniuses who listen to the Horror Vanguard podcast back to the Horror Vanguard podcast. My name is Kyle, aka Labor Kyle, and as always, we are joined by the other hosts of the Horror Vanguard podcast, Ashley Darrow and John, aka the Lit Crit Guy. How are we doing, friends? How are your trucks doing?
Oh, my Kenworth is shiny and freshly detailed. I am hauling ass out of Chi-Town, making sure that bear in the sky does not catch this convoy of discourse.
I'm just like leaning out the side of like a car and doing like the pull the horn gesture really loud. It's great. It's great. Love it. Love everything about it.
Sorry, how's your lorry?
Oh, I see how it's going to be.
I have sent our other co-hosts gratuitous amounts of uppers through the mail, so we can all continue to long haul this podcasting session, specifically to talk about the worst version of one of the most incredibly unhinged film adaptations of a Stephen King essay, also starring. Danny Kincannon from The West Wing. Shout outs to the White House Washington Post correspondent, Danny Kincannon, and his intense relationship with White House Press Secretary C.J. Craig, played by, I know.
Played by my mom, Allison Janney. Yep.
Yes, the far too good for any of the schlock that Aaron Sorkin could ever write for her, Allison Janney, an absolute national American treasure.
Facts.
So this is a movie that I'm sure is about things, but I haven't seen it. I'm gonna do a bunch of speed, and I'm gonna watch it on 10 times while. while taking a break to proposition someone in a truck stop restroom, and then but in the meantime, I think we need to know what this movie is about. So Ash, would you mind enlightening us?
The truck and the infrastructure required for it are outstanding barometers for the American cultural landscape. There's something about these vehicles, what they do to our roads and bridges, and how this all holds us together culturally, that is beyond compelling. One NBC News broadcast demonstrated that the truck and SUV drivers could not see children on the road until it was too late. The very design of these vehicles is purpose-built to sweep children and pedestrians under the vehicle to their doom. Teamsters, redlining, and pollution are just a few of the measures of the politics of the truck and the lines they drive through our perception of the political landscape. The story of left resistance to car culture is a story of withering defeats and half-won victories. We let them do this to our cities, our worlds, and our very minds. We don't need to worry about climate change or nuclear weapons destroying our world. Capitalism is a machine designed to create the destruction of the human at any and all costs. If, and that's a dire if, we stop today's most critical problems, capitalism will innovate us towards newer and ever more occulted oblivions. And what of our storied resistance? Communism, anarchism, socialism, you name it, has hitherto been a struggle against a winning force. Our triumphs often nothing more than horrid compromises sold back to us as a post-consumer polyester vinyl victory banner. We move while carrying the weight of a working-class history like a well-worn memory, so rubbed clean of details and reworked through retelling, while we live for nothing more than the chance to gas a machine. We are already dead. Already just a subservient piece of machinery. So often less valuable than the cogs we grease or the spreadsheets we type. We shouldn't live in fear of a world where we might lose our humanity. That's been gone for generations. We should, instead, live in rage and hope of a day soon, where we can live our humanity once again, put it back in motion. Where does this leave us, oh machinic listeners? Our hearts hard pumping with microplastic grease? On Halloween 2011, a lesser-known YouTuber going by the handle Red Rosie uploaded a video entitled Big Truck, stylized with all caps. Big Truck is a Dark Souls build video showcasing a tank so tough that it could make Havel weep. Big Truck has only default intelligence and faith, but it makes up for it in a world of strength, vitality, and endurance. Big Truck is what we call a troll build, a gimmick meant to kick up laughs through the sheer improbability of a build this absurd winning fight after fight. The world of Dark Souls, and by tradition all FromSoft games, has been ruled by a single credo: get good. The idea that failures are solely the purview of individual responsibility and that vague notions of discipline or will are all one needs to triumph over adversity has been the guiding light of the mechanics of this franchise. The get-good ideology overlaps with the shortfalls of left political struggle. Is the fight one in which we need to just get good, or one in which we must find an exit from a framework which imposes an individualized order on a much broader horizon of potential? Big Truck negates the framework of Dark Souls down to the very ethos of the game. It doesn't search for a way out, it makes one. Like C.W. McCall's Convoy, it jettisons the rulebook and breaks through the barriers, stopping potential dead in the road. The truck is more than just a vehicle, perhaps more so than any other personal conveyance besides the motorcycle, bike, or American muscle car. The truck is an instrument for the creation of the lived human condition of its moment. With enough cultural and material tuning, we flesh machines might turn poetry out of the sickly smog and grease that chokes our cities. C.W. McCall's Convoy and the Old Home Bread commercial may have summoned the trucker craze into our world, but the necessary conditions for this expressive emergence had been fomenting since the first workers sung the first song of their tools. The truck is something of an appropriately ambiguous vocalization tethering itself to a range of vehicles and concepts, all rotating around a spoke that is hauling a burden. Whether we're talking Tacomas or Schneiders, trucks are both a working tool and a lavish symbol of consumer wealth. Keith Bradshaw's book on truck and SUV culture, High and Mighty, recalls the auto industry's own view on who buys big trucks when divorced from their origin as a workplace tool. Who has been buying the SUVs since the automakers turned them into family vehicles? They tend to be people who are insecure and vain. They are frequently nervous about their marriages and uncomfortable about parenthood. They often lack confidence in their driving skills. Above all, they are apt to be self-centered and self-absorbed with little interest in their neighbors or communities. Yet, we can go further. If the truck and all of its manifestations can be pulled rightward, we can pull it leftward just as well. We can queer the big truck. 100 Gex, in their frantic, dancey style, gave us the line, "Big boys coming with the big trucks. I feel so clean like a money machine." We are big boys coming in our big trucks. We could yet be clean. We could yet surpass our money machines. The truck can be left. The truck can be yet trans. The truck can be queered. Red Rosie's Big Truck video is scored by Cole Chambers' song of the same name, a new metal banger that hammers and hammers. Its lyrics are pushing and strange, the raw materials of C.W. McCall's Convoy anthem. The song closes with a line that pulls all of this together. Like those union miners hung in Montana, like Joe Hill himself, as with our very struggle and inspiring figures new and old, ain't no grave gonna hold my body down. Join us as we discuss trucks.
I gotta be honest, you talk a lot of big game, Ash, for someone with such a small truck.
100 Gex mentioned. 100 Gex mentioned.
$1 million.
$1 million.
I don't want to give it away, but do you, like, I have the lyrics to that song open on my laptop because I knew we were talking about this movie. I mean, this is just the commodity fetishism of alienation, right? So because it's like the thing that there's something that you said in the said, like, owning a truck is one thing, owning a big rig is something very different, because like most long haul drivers don't own the truck they're driving, right? The truck is a labor tool that's owned by their employer. And often they're not even given the dignity of being an employee. They're a contractor, right? They're renting their own instrument of work. And it's like this really insidious way. This is what Badia calls the false contradiction, right? So it's this idea of like, is there this supposed antagonism between capitalism on the one hand and this newly resurgent kind of inchoate reactionaryism that's sprung up, you know, that often gets called like populism. And he says like the false contradiction is like, it basically thinks that capitalism is fine, right? There isn't really an antagonism there. But it's like, when you understand this as like a commodity fetishism that has then been as a way of obscuring the essential, like, there's a really good book by a French economist talking about the concept of criticality, which is like, how do you understand where in the distribution of labor is kind of crucial to exert like political power? And increasingly it's in like the logistics side of the economy, right? It's about the movement of goods, because really that's a synecdoche for like the movement of capital, right? So if you have a radical unionized trucking movement, which is still, for better or worse, the biggest way that stuff gets moved around the planet, like, there's a lot of political power in that. So it's incredibly important, I think, that this kind of like pseudo reactionary politics that's really just, you know, rewarmed capitalist conservatism has turned the big rig into a commodity symbol, right? Because it means you're literally buying into your own alienation.
Oh, oh my God.
I was so Marxist, he started coughing. They started coughing.
Yeah, no. The point was so good, my body couldn't contain the overwhelming revelations you caused within me. So I just had these kind of ruptures. No. But I think you're spot on, and I think like this ties into like the thing that's like the kind of absent presence of this movie, right? Which is like the trucker as worker. You know, like we see trucker as class signifier, or not class signifier, as like aesthetic all over this movie. Right, like the, you know, the beer drinking, the trucker hats, the jeans, right? Like the kind of like what a trucker would have looked like in the late 80s through the early mid 90s, you know, but like the kind of labor is there, like, and I find that to be fascinating, right? Like there's kind of like these specific questions of the owner operator, mm-hmm. right? Like this thing that's like fading out of existence as exactly as John said, as trucks become kind of a feature of the rentier capitalist economy. You have to rent your tools from your boss. And what I find to be like absolutely captivating about this particular film is that like there's like nothing fantasy happening in here. Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, what if humans couldn't live for themselves anymore and we were enslaved to like the petro state and our existence was nothing more than either gassing trucks or facilitating the gassing of vehicles? Wouldn't that be horrible? This is almost a Verhoeven movie.
Yeah, I for one welcome our new truck overlords, and I will run the fuel station like it's the freaking Navy, mm-hmm. in an effort to not get run over or trapped in a small space, and have exhaust shot at me. There's this weird introspection in this movie that, like, this is another movie. This is a deeply strange movie that I think probably in its context as like a made for TV movie, as a like Canadian US production, as a like an attempt to try and like categorize and imagine different, you know, peoples and individuals in the 1990s. This movie, it's deep, very deeply 90s. Maybe that's main difference between this and Maximum Overdrive, besides the metric ton of drugs from the that was used to make the latter. It has this this very like, honestly, kind of vacant, but I still think genuine sincerity to try and examine the internal lives of all the individual characters in it. There's a lot of story arc that happens, and that this is for like this is a true ensemble cast. You got mm-hmm. My aforementioned my guys, the weird the weird hick duo that might as well be one person. I like how they're kind of
one of those guys is you and the other one is me before I started HR. Yeah, it's great representation of this film.
It's exactly right. And if we were imagined as the twins in The Shining,
yeah,
just kind of like this like very honest, clear.
I literally almost fell out of my chair.
It's very, you know what? If we were the twins in The Shining, Ash, at pre-transition Ash, I think this is exactly how it would work out.
100%.
I just find very I find it to be very funny how everyone has to solve their parental issues in the next 90 minutes. Otherwise, I feel like the characters will die if they
otherwise
don't have.
Otherwise, they'll get run over by a truck.
Quite literally, will just get run over. Don't answer the phone. Don't leave the diner. There's no hope for you. Because maybe aliens, maybe the government, maybe ghosts, maybe no one really knows. No one really knows exactly. And maybe that's the most powerful point. Maybe that's the point that I'm trying to like walk myself toward, is that it has this kind of the example, the sort of like material force coming to life to literally run people over has a really I don't know. Someone else talk.